on March 24th, 2005, and I'm going to open a public hearing on House Bill 2001. And Jim, before I have you do anything, I'm going to go ahead and ask the speaker to come up and kind of introduce the bill to us.
Do you want him to give an explanation of the bill before?
If you don't mind, Madam Speaker. Go ahead and give us a little brief explanation of this, if you would, Jim.
Yes, sir. House Bill 2001 creates the Director of Legislative Audit Office appointed by the Joint Legislative Audit Committee, authorizes the Director to conduct performance and management audits of state agencies and programs and other state-funded programs, requires the Director to maintain a government waste hotline, repeals statutory authority of the Secretary of State to conduct performance and program audits, declares an emergency effective on passage. We have a dash one amendment, and it also has a subsequent referral to Ways and Means.
Okay, great. Thank you. Thank you, Jim. Madam Speaker.
Good morning, Chair Cromwell, members of the committee. Thank you for the opportunity to appear before you here today. I'm Karen Minnis, Speaker of the House, representing House District 49. I'm here today to testify in support of House Bill 2001, a bill that would provide a key oversight function of our state agencies and programs, which Oregon is presently lacking. I want to discuss two major areas here in my testimony today. One, critical issues for Oregon's legislative branch, and what House Bill 2001 changes and what it does not change. A recent publication from the National Conference of State Legislatures noted that there are many roles the legislative branch of any state plays in the course of carrying out its duties of its citizens, debating public policy, enacting laws, appropriating funds, etc. The publication noted that a fundamental role that most state legislators have is the responsibility to oversee government operations and ensure that the public services are delivered to citizens in an effective and efficient manner. This accountability role is a critical part of our constitutional system of separation of powers and is essential to ensuring that the trust the citizens place in government is well placed. House Bill 2001 brings Oregon's legislative branch into line with that, with what most other states' legislatures have, certain audit oversight of state agencies. House Bill 2001 does this while preserving the constitutional role of the Secretary of State as the auditor of public accounts. Let me tell you about some conversations I had at the NCSL meeting I attended. I led a delegation on a trip, and I was speaking to, there were several treasurers, there were committee staffers, talked with the representatives from Kansas and Tennessee, all of whom have an audited function within their legislative branch, and they work within those particular legislative bodies, and they were astounded that Oregon does not have, the Oregon Legislative Fiscal Office does not have an audit function within their purview, particularly given that we pass bills, we do budget notes, we make changes in the fiscal while balancing the budget. And sometimes when you're an auditor from the outside, you don't always understand what the nuances were and what the request was made of the state agency or what changes in performance and those kinds of things that were requested by the legislative assembly. So if you have members that understand there is oversight of the changes, of perhaps maybe a budget note or a direction that was given, having someone in an audit function that understands what the discourse that took place during that previous biennium helps us clarify and helps us keep, I believe, agencies accountable for what's requested of them or what direction they've been given by the Legislative Assembly. Hearing these officials from other states relate to me how vital they felt this role was for the state legislative branch convinced me that was something we needed to do here in Oregon. 29 other state legislatures have this kind of authority, and I believe Oregon should join that list. We need to make sure that our state agencies are operating efficiently and effectively, doing their jobs in the right way, that is according to state laws, and properly spending state resources. House Bill 2001 creates a legislative audit office, which would do the following: conduct performance and management audits at state agencies and programs, and operate and maintain the government waste hotline. House Bill 2001 effectively transfers these areas that are presently under the auspices of the Secretary of State and places those duties in this new legislative audit office. Let me emphasize something. Secretary of State would keep the duties of Auditor of Public Accounts as established in Article 4, Section 2 of the Oregon Constitution. Nothing in House Bill 2001 takes away any constitutionally required duties of his office. I understand the Legislative Council is here today and will discuss this point further with you. Additional elements in House Bill 2001 are cost savings for taxpayers. Our research in this concept showed we could do the same job at a lower cost with fewer people than is being done right now by the State Audits Division. Again, lower cost, fewer people than is being done right now by the State Audits Division. We also, there would be better organization with emphasis on a narrow set of duties by this new office. We believe the Legislative Office Audit Office can better organize and conduct these types of audits. In closing, I want to note that we have a charge as elected representatives to make sure our government is using the taxpayers' money efficiently, effectively, and responsibly. House Bill 2001 will allow the Oregon Legislature to have the oversight authority it should have, which over half of the other states in this country have right now. It is my belief that House Bill 2001 will enable us better to fulfill our duties as state legislators, along with providing more effective supervision of state government. Thank you for your time. Are there any questions?
Thank you, Madam Speaker. Are you willing to take questions?
I am.
Okay. Are there any questions for Speaker Minnis? Representative Tingpo.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chair and Madam Speaker. I have a question regarding the scope of this of the new office that you're proposing to set up, or in this bill, House Bill 2001. And when I first, my first day on audits, and you know this is the first time I've served on audits, I've been learning a lot, thanks to the direction of the chair. And one of the first questions I asked was, sort of naively, is do we audit tax expenditures? And I was sort of surprised to find out we don't really do an audit. We do an evaluation, but it's not part of the audit function. It's not part of the Secretary of State's function. And also, when I had talked to several folks in both legislative revenue and legislative fiscal, they sort of said, yeah, we don't really audit these. What we do is the agency that administers does an evaluation. And I tried to find out what the criteria were for that evaluation, and sitting on audits certainly made me appreciate that, you know, we audit one part of our budget, but we don't seem to audit the other part of the budget. And so would you see that this new legislative audit office would or could or should take on the function of auditing tax expenditures, which are a large part of our budget?
I think if that was under the purview of the legislative fiscal office's responsibility, I would not object to that.
Thank you.
Okay. Thank you. Representative Brown.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Good morning, Madam Speaker. I haven't had a chance to go all the way through the bill yet, but is there a time frame and spelled out when the audits will be done and who the report is to? And
no, I don't know about all the bones. I think there's still some construct that needs to take place with this bill. I should have Bruce Anderson, who has worked on this, in my office. Bruce, you want to come up? He can help answer some of these questions. I feel, frankly, that the legislative branch has been at a disadvantage in the 20 years I've been in this building, because we have a very difficult time getting numbers, and we're kind of at the mercy of the executive branch. We have to call them up and say, what do you think about this? Instead of, or could we get some numbers on this or that or the other thing, instead of us having the ability to run our own numbers to be able to cross-check. I think that this concept is long overdue, and I think that would help strengthen the legislative branch of office in the state.
Thank you. For the record, Bruce Anderson with the Speaker's Office. Mr. Chair, Representative Brown. No, I don't believe so. That is not the type of thing that I believe this bill is seeking to get into. I believe this bill is merely establishing this as an office within the legislative body. So that level of detail I don't believe is in there.
I see it, and I think it's in the dash one amendment. Follow-up, please.
Follow-up, Representative.
In the dash one amendment, it spells out who makes up the audit committee. Mm-hmm. Will they be the ones that direct the activities of the this office, legislative audit office?
This office would come under the oversight that the legislative fiscal office we have now. The fiscal office would oversee, currently as it's in the bill now, would oversee the audit's function. And certainly we would continue to have an audit committee that would the fiscal office could report to. But for practical purposes, this would come under the purview of the legislative fiscal office, who would coordinate. You know, they know what happened in that particular biennium, what changes were made in the budgets, and this would come under their purview. And certainly, I think the audit committee would have the ability to give oversight as well.
Well, if I could add something to that, Mr. Chairman, the Joint Legislative Audit Committee, I think, would be, if I'm not mistaken, it may be spelled out in the bill that they would be the one that would be hiring the new audit, the director of the Legislative Audit Office. I believe that would be the title. But they would be presumably working in concert with the Legislative Fiscal Office.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just a comment. I really like the idea and the concept I see here. When the part that we're missing from as a legislative body, this is one segment of the financial part of it that we're missing. We have the revenue office, we have the fiscal office, and this type of office to manage what we're doing within the other two, certainly, or to have the oversight of what we're doing.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Representative Rosenbaum, did you have a question?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Good morning, Madam Speaker. I was just curious if you think that this change might politicize the audit function and sort of put it back into the realm of partisan politics.
I don't believe so. I think it strengthens the legislative branch. I don't think it's a partisan issue. I think it doesn't, this is about the legislative branch as a whole versus the executive branch. And I think the legislative branch should have an opportunity to be able to run audits to make sure that the laws they pass are implemented correctly, that state agencies are performing up to the standard that the Legislative Assembly has asked them to. It holds its ability to hold agencies accountable.
Thank you.
Any other questions? I have one, Madam Speaker, and that is you made one of the comments you made was about budget notes, and one of the things that we've understood from earlier Attorney General opinions that have been rendered relative to budget notes is that budget notes, of course, do not have force of law, and
that's correct.
Yes. So do you see the audit office as sort of being able to, I don't know if enforce is the right word, but follow up maybe is a more correct word with the budget notes, so that if there's a question that an agency has about a budget note and what it means and that sort of thing, then the audit office would be able to follow up with that?
I think if the audit office is working in conjunction with the legislative fiscal office, who oversees the crafting of those budgets and understands the intent of the committee, I think it will help hold those agencies accountable as to the intent of the legislative body when they draft the respective budgets.
Okay, thank you. Thank you.
All right.
Are there any other questions? Madam Speaker, thank you very much for coming this morning. Okay, I would like to, out of courtesy, I would like to ask the Secretary of State to go ahead and come forward. He's here, he's ready, he's willing, And so...
Mr. Chair, with your permission, I'd like Sandy Hilton, who's our audit manager, to join me.
Sure, that'd be fine.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and members of the Audit Committee. I'm here in opposition to House Bill... Oh, I should introduce myself. Bill Bradbury.
Please do.
Bill Bradbury, Oregon Secretary of State.
Thank you.
And I'm here in opposition to House Bill 2001. And what I'd like to do is just, as part of my testimony, walk you through a little bit of history regarding this issue. And I'm going to take you back quite a ways to 1850. The territorial statutes stated that the auditor of public accounts should, and I quote, prepare and report such plans as he may deem expedient for the support of public credit, for lessening the public expenses, for using the public money to the best advantage, for promoting frugality and economy in public offices, and generally for the better management and more perfect understanding of the fiscal affairs of the territory. That was in the territorial statutes back in 1850. Then, in 1857, the Oregon Constitution was adopted. And the Constitution incorporated the duties defined in the territorial statutes through Article 6, Section 2, where the Constitution clearly states that, quote, the Secretary of State shall be, by virtue of his office, auditor of public accounts. Now, despite the clarity of the Constitution, Secretaries of State have in the past, and I'm quite sure will continue in the future, to defend against efforts to remove auditing from the office in which it is originally and, more importantly, constitutionally vested. Now, in 1962, Secretary Howell Appling Jr. Asked if some other office could be granted auditing authority. The answer in Attorney General Opinion Number 5378 was a very clear and resounding no. The opinion goes on to say, that opinion in 1962 goes on to say that, quote, where the Constitution creates an office and prescribes the duties thereof, the office cannot be abolished nor the constitutional duties thereof abridged by the legislature. Then, in 1979, Secretary Norma Paulus asked if the legislature was permitted to delegate any aspect of the audit function, including performance audits, to any other branch of state government. And the answer in Attorney General Opinion Number 7759 was again no. The opinion goes on to say that, quote, both historically and fundamentally, the office of state auditor was created and exists for the basic purpose of having a completely independent representative of the people, accountable to no one else, with the power, duty, and authority to examine and pass upon the activities of state officers and agencies who, by law, receive and expend public monies. So we've got two, and my impression was you were going to receive copies of the Attorney General's opinion.
Yes.
Okay.
We do have those.
We have two very clear Attorney General's opinions. And now in 2005, House Bill 2001 seeks to assign an audit function to a new legislative office. Now, is this attempt to move audits to the legislature different from previous attempts? No. Has the Constitution changed since the last Attorney General's opinion confirming the legislature may not appropriate audits? No, the Constitution hasn't changed. So, can the legislature, through House Bill 2001, take over an auditing function? And the answer is still no. So I would respectfully urge the committee to oppose House Bill 2001. And I want to add one thing, which is that our chief state auditor, Kathy Polino, who heads the audits division, who's not able to be here today, she has worked very, very closely with the Joint Legislative Audit Committee. I don't know if any of the members of this committee serve on JLAC, but she has worked very closely with JLAC, and she reviews all of the audit plans with JLAC. She asks continually for suggestions from the legislature. And we have been a part of a working group that JLAC put together that has put in a bill that would make the Joint Legislative Audit Committee a standing committee. I just want to be really clear here. We welcome the ideas, the input, the advice of the legislature in conducting our audit function. We just feel very strongly that we have a constitutionally protected office, and it's not appropriate to shift duties away from this office, but we want to work very closely with the legislature in carrying out that audit function, and I think our five-year history with the Joint Legislative Audit Committee would confirm our sincerity of that desire. So thank you very much for the opportunity to testify.
Thank you, Mr. Secretary. Questions for Secretary of State Bill Bradbury? Well, before you start walking away, I do have a couple.
Good, thank you.
We don't let you out of here quite that easy.
Oh, I'm fine.
In the first of all, the constitutional aspect of it. It states that that he it says in the Constitution says he shall by virtue of his office shall be by virtue of his office auditor of public accounts and shall perform such other duties as shall be assigned him by law.
Right.
And my question is, wouldn't you agree that the legislative audits division of the Secretary of State's office is actually created by law, by the legislature?
It's certainly funded by the legislature. So, yes, it's created by the legislature as part of our constitutionally required audit function.
Okay, I guess I would draw your attention to, I believe it's Chapter 297 of the Oregon Revised Statutes. And in the statute, it describes what the audits division will do, and at 297.070 it states that performance and program audits for all state departments, boards, commissions, institutions, and state aided institutions and agencies shall be conducted on the basis of risk assessment and on standards established by the nationally recognized entities, including but not limited to the United States General Accounting Office. It goes on to say then the Secretary of State shall adopt it and the Joint Legislative Audit Committee shall approve the rules specifying all criteria, and it says that the Secretary of State shall schedule the performance and program audits as directed by the Joint Legislative Audit Committee. My point here, that's by the way in 297.070 sub 1. My point here is that for performance audit purposes, the legislature has given that task at this particular point to the Secretary of State's Audits Division. What prevents the legislature from removing that function from the Audits Division and moving it into its own legislative audits office? And how does that diminish the Secretary of State's function as auditor of public accounts?
Mr. Chair, good question. The authority for conducting performance audits comes at its basis from the territorial statutes, where we talk about efficiency and effectiveness of government. And those territorial statutes were assumed, incorporated into the Constitution, so they are part of the Secretary of State's audit authority.
Okay. I'm going to respectfully disagree with you, but that's
your right.
That certainly is my right to do that. You're right. Now, the other thing that I would ask you about is, because you cited a couple of Attorney General opinions, and one that was rendered in March of 1985 by then Attorney General Dave Frohnmayer. Basically, he says that it can that the Secretary of State's office absolutely by constitutional authority is the auditor of public accounts and should audit the fiscal aspects of the agencies. It also states that there's, and also I think this is in an earlier AG's opinion, the one by Redden, that says that any other part, any other information, if you will, that the Secretary of State's office needs to be able to carry that out, it needs to be made available. But from a standpoint of whether or not performance audits as such, and as what the present bill would describe, solely constitutionally rests in the office of the Secretary of State's office, basically says no, that's not the case within the discussion of the opinion. Any thoughts about that? I mean,
we apparently have some competing Attorney General's opinions, but I think it's very clear that from the point of the territorial statutes on, the Secretary of State's audit authority includes the authority to conduct performance audits. So that's my view very clearly.
Yes, it is. Okay.
Right.
That's fine. I just wanted to see what and I appreciate you being here this morning to talk about the bill and we will, I guess, we'll be in touch.
All right.
Thank you. Thank you again. And I didn't know if Sandy had anything that she wanted to add or were you just kind of here for moral support?
Chair Kremel.
Because he hasn't done this very well.
Chair Kremel, members of the committee, I don't have anything to add. However, I am available if you had any questions.
Okay. Thank you very much.
Okay.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Secretary. Okay, what I would like to do is have Ted Reutlinger from Legislative Council come on up, if he would please. And good morning.
Good morning.
Make sure that if you would state your name for the record, you can go ahead with.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, for the record, I'm Ted Reutlinger from the Legislative Council's office. The chair asked me to come this morning and briefly describe the constitutional issues that this bill does raise. You've heard a little bit about them in the previous testimony. House Bill 2001 does raise constitutional issues because what it does is eliminate the authority of the Secretary of State to conduct performance and program audits as is now granted by statute. It transfers that to a new legislative audit office, and that does raise a constitutional issue because Section 2, Article 6 of the Oregon Constitution says that the Secretary of State is the auditor of public accounts. That provision is self-executing. There's no statutory provisions that are needed to allow the Secretary of State to audit public accounts. A key point is that when the legislature, when the Constitution grants an office duties, as it does in this case, the legislature may not diminish, abridge, or otherwise limit those constitutional duties. So this bill does raise a constitutional issue because it shifts an auditing function from the Secretary to the Legislative Audit Office. However, the Constitution does not, by its terms, really define the scope of the Secretary of State's audit authority. And as the Secretary described, the Attorney General's opinions go back to the territorial statutes and try to divine from them exactly what the scope of the Secretary of State's audit authority is. There aren't any court opinions that really help us determine what the Constitution exactly means. However, there are a number of Attorney General's opinions, and basically what those say is that the Secretary of State's audit authority is limited to fiscal auditing of public claims and accounts. Basically, that means determining fiscal accountability for funds received and monies expended. The Attorney General opinions also say that the Constitution does not provide independent authority for the Secretary of State to conduct program or performance audits. Basically, they say that any independent authority for that has to come from statute. However, there's a big caveat there in the opinions where the AG has said that the Secretary of State does have the authority to evaluate performance, to do performance auditing when the Secretary determines that's necessary in the context of a financial audit that the Secretary of State is conducting. So basically, in other words, that means that while the Secretary is conducting a financial audit that the Secretary has authority to conduct under the Constitution, and the Secretary finds performance issues that they need to address, that they can do that under their constitutional authority. Otherwise, the Constitution does not grant the Secretary of State independent authority to go out and conduct simply a performance audit of a state agency. So a key point here for this bill is that what the legislature can't do is diminish by statute the authority that the Secretary of State now has to evaluate performance when the Secretary of State is doing that in the context of a financial audit. Otherwise, there is no independent constitutional authority for the Secretary to conduct performance or program or management audits. So what this bill does under current law, 297.070, defines what a program audit is, what a performance audit is. The Secretary of State is authorized under that statute to conduct and schedule program audits at the direction of the Joint Legislative Audit Committee. This bill, 2001, transfers the responsibility for conducting performance and management audits from the Secretary to the new Legislative Audit Office. We think that based on these Attorney General opinions that House Bill 2001 is defensible against a constitutional challenge, that it intrudes upon the constitutional authority of the Secretary of State. Because, first, under these AG opinions, it seems pretty clear that they're saying that the Secretary does not have independent constitutional authority to conduct only a performance or a program audit. They're saying that the Secretary may do that in the context of a financial audit, but they're also saying that the Constitution doesn't authorize or direct the Secretary of State to do simply a performance audit. Second, we don't see that House Bill 2001 really limits or conflicts with the Secretary's authority to conduct a fiscal audit or to conduct a performance audit that happens in the context of a fiscal audit. So we don't see a real limitation or conflict on with the Secretary's financial auditing authority. And finally, what this bill basically does is simply remove the existing statutory authority that grants the Secretary of State the ability to conduct just a performance or just a program audit, and it transfers that to the Legislative Audit Office. These are just the audits that the Secretary can do that are independent of their financial auditing authority. So for those reasons, we think that House Bill 2001 is defensible against a challenge that might be brought alleging that it intrudes upon the Secretary of State's auditing authority under Section 2, Article 6 of the Oregon Constitution. me, and I'd be happy to try and address any questions.
Thank you. Questions for Ms. Reutlinger? Representative Rosenbaum?
Thank you. Ted, I'm not sure I'm following what you're saying very well, because it seems like looking at these attorney general's opinions, they're pretty unequivocal in saying that what this bill attempts to do is not allowable under the Constitution. And so is it your testimony that the Secretary of State could continue to do exactly what they are doing right now in addition to what this bill sets up as a legislative audit authority?
Mr. Chair, Representative Rosenbaum, not exactly. Under current law, the Secretary of State may go out and conduct an independent performance or program audit at the direction of the Joint Legislative Audit Committee. This would be an audit that is really separate from their financial auditing authority that's granted under the Constitution. This bill would remove that authority and give it to the new Legislative Audit Committee. This bill would not affect the Secretary of State's current constitutional authority to conduct financial audits and to get into issues of program evaluation where the Secretary of State thinks that's necessary in order to conduct a financial audit. What these opinions seem to say is that the Secretary of State may conduct performance auditing when they find it's necessary as part of a financial audit. But what they also seem to say is that the Secretary of State does not have the constitutional authority to simply do a performance audit of a state agency. If they do performance auditing, it has to be as part of a financial audit.
Follow-up, Representative?
And have you researched those other states that were mentioned that do have a legislative audit function? Do they have similar language to Oregon's Constitution in their constitutions?
Mr. Chair, Representative Rosenbaum, I have not researched the other states, so I cannot answer that question.
Okay. Other questions?
Thank you.
Representative Dinkfelder?
Thank you. Just goes to show the great minds think alike, because I was going to say I was equally confused, but I think that you have clarified that now. However, this is a follow-up question to Representative Rosenbaum's question. If I'm trying to figure out how this is going to save the state money, as Speaker Minnis had indicated, if we're going to have now two separate bodies or two separate agencies doing audit functions, because if I'm hearing you right, and I want to make sure I'm understanding this right, you're saying the Secretary of State's office has the ability currently to conduct financial audits and can do performance or measurement or management audits as part of that financial audit capability, but they can't do them independently. However, under this bill, the legislative audit function could do performance and management audits independently, and then the Secretary of State's office would continue doing fiscal audits, so wouldn't we have twice as many auditors doing what currently the Secretary of State's office does? That's where I'm sort of confused. Or maybe you can help illuminate for me how it would save the state money.
Mr. Chair, Representative Dingfelder, I'm not qualified to speak on how it would save the state money. However, under the current law, the Secretary of State has the auditors that they employ to do financial audits and, to some extent, performance audits under their constitutional authority. They also, under the current law, can do performance and program audits at the direction of the Legislative Audit Committee. So under current law, you still have basically that dual system going on. I think what this bill does is basically shift the authority to hire the people who are going to do the performance and program audits away from the Secretary of State to the legislative branch. And so presumably you would kind of have the same number of people doing the same number of functions. It would simply move that from the Secretary of State's office to the legislative branch.
Follow up,
Representative?
Maybe I, and I'm assuming we may hear or not, but I'd like to find out from the Secretary of State's office if that process is currently in place, mm-hmm. Would the same person who's conducting the financial audit, is there a separate set of performance auditors or it's the same, you know, person that would conduct the financial audit and then work on the performance audit. That's the type of information I think we would need to know, because what I'm hearing to me is it's not that we're going to have a cost saving when you're going to have, could be twice as many people doing the same function, or you might have to have managers overseeing both. And I guess I'd have to hear more about the mechanics of that. It just sounds to me like we'd have sort of duplication instead of streamlining the process, which seems that the process now is a lot tighter because you're doing the financial audit and then you say, well, maybe we need to look at the performance or management aspects at the same time. So I guess these are questions that would have to be worked out. It's more of a comment.
Okay, yeah, I wasn't sure I saw a question in there.
I'm not sure if you can answer. I mean, we may have to have the Secretary of State's office come up and explain how they do the financial.
And I would be glad to do that, have Sandy come back up in just a minute. But one of the things that I would point out is that according to the NCSL, Oregon, number of performance audit staff that Oregon has is 30. And for other states that have similar populations as Oregon, Colorado has 1 million more people and has the same number of people doing performance audits. Kentucky has about the same number of people as Oregon and has 6 people that do performance audits. So there's quite a range in terms of the number of people that actually do the function. And we can ask Sandy to come up and answer that when Ted's done. The other thing I would point out is that the Secretary of State's office does have an assessment that is allowed by law now, that state agencies pay to the Secretary of State's office for the purposes of the performance and other audits. So that's something that, and I'm not sure that the current bill, the present bill, addresses that. That I think is something that would be addressed in Ways and Means. But we can also have Mr. Rocco answer that question for us.
Thank you.
Are there other questions for Ted? Ted, thank you very much. We appreciate you coming down. Let's see. What I'd like to do is see Sandy. Could you come back up and just answer these questions real quick? Either Sandy or Patty. What I'd like to do is just have you answer the question relative to that Representative Dingfelder had relative to the number of people, and is what NCS the information we have from NCSL correct? Because my understanding is that right now in the audits division there's about 76 FTE, and 32 of those are in the performance audit staff, 30 of which are the professional folks like Sandy, you, and then 2 are your support staff.
Mr. Chair, for the record, Patty McGuire, Deputy Secretary of State. I'm going to let Sandy talk a little more in detail about how the audits division operates and use herself as an example, but I think there would be a huge logistical problem for us if, say, 30 FTE were to be pulled out of the audits division and transferred to the legislative branch of government. We are required to produce on an annual basis an audit of all federal funds. There's a federal requirement. During the portion of the year where that's happening, virtually everyone in the audits division is working on that, and our ability to get the single audit done timely and qualify for something like $9 billion in federal funds depends upon us having enough people during a portion of the year to finish that work timely. So while there are on paper 30 FTE devoted to performance audits, there are times of the year when it's a significantly smaller number, like a handful, and 25 of those are going to be working on other things. And then there are other times of the year where a majority of the non-performance auditors are working on performance audits. So let me let Sandy talk about her work.
Real briefly, Sandy.
Chair Krumbull, members of the committee. For the record, I'm Sandy Hilton with the Oregon Audits Division. I'm an audit manager. Yes, I would like to agree with that. As myself, as an example, I'm a certified public accountant. I have worked with the audits division almost 16 years and have done a variety of engagements, including many financial statement opinion audits, as well as performance audits, financial compliance, and special investigations. So, you know, I'm kind of an example of what is created out of the audits division. I'm able to shift hats and go where I'm needed. And so that allocation of resources is very handy, and many of our staff are in that position. We have certified staff in different fields. We have information system auditors. We also have certified fraud examiners and certified public accountants. So, you know, we're able to move around and allocate our resources as we need to. And during sometimes when the financial system really, when the financial cycle really starts and we're working on the statewide audit, many of our resources have to shift that direction in order for us to meet those stringent timelines. And I've done both many times within a certain year even. So we do shift our resources like that. I also think, too, I'd like to point out, if I could, that under the auditing standards, we do follow the general, we refer to it as the yellow book.
Right.
And under these standards, too, there is the professional competency standards. There's some general standards. And your audit, when you do an audit, regardless, you're supposed to have that professional competency within that whole audit team. And because we do have such a nice varied staff, we are able to meet that requirement. And I think that's something that's really important for the integrity of our audits and to be considered, too, by the audit committee.
Yeah, thank you. Thank you. Are there any other questions for them?
That's my question. Thank you.
Thank you. Ken, would you like to come up? Ken Rocco?
Ken Rocco, Legislative Fiscal Office. Mr. Chair, the speaker asked for me to come and talk to you briefly about the background of this bill. The speaker had asked Legislative Fiscal to develop this concept during the interim. We did some work for her to get the bill ready. One of the things that we looked at was a survey of done by the National Legislative Program Evaluation Society in the year 2000, and what we found is most states, actually approximately 44 states, have some type of legislative program evaluation office, and in more than half of these cases, they've existed for over 20 years. And in many of these states, these evaluations are initiated either by a legislative directive, by a governing committee, by a legislative request, or self-initiated by the actual office involved. And in the organizational status of these offices varies widely, but in almost all cases, they ultimately report to some type of legislative committee. And we also noted that the average was about 32 FTE in these offices, but more than half of them had less than 25 FTE. We also had Legislative Fiscal Office had sponsored a presentation earlier this session by the National Conference of State Legislatures on legislating for results. And we had a couple of presenters from states that are heavy into performance measuring and linking performance measurement to budgets. That would be Florida and Texas. And in both of the cases, the presenters indicated that if you're going to move to a system of budgeting on the basis of performance measures, the legislative branch needs to have some type of a legislative function in monitoring how agencies perform, basically an audit of their performance measures. And right now, we do not have the capability of doing that. The Legislative Fiscal Office has done some performance or program reviews for the Joint Legislative Audit Committee in the interim. We've done some 25 of these over the last 8 or 10 years. So we do that in the interim. During session, however, we do not have the staff to continue those kinds of activities. I know the Secretary of State has also mentioned how they help with the Joint Legislative Audit Committee, and that's accurate. They've communicated with the committee. They make presentations and have their audits reviewed or their work plans reviewed by the committee in the interim. The only difficulty with that is that as a separately elected official, they have to maintain some independence. And so the, despite their willingness to work with the legislative branch, they are independent from that branch. And so the legislature in itself doesn't have the ability to specifically direct them to do something that they must then do as a legislative audit office would.
So, does that mean that basically in ORS 297-065, where sub 2, where it says the Joint Legislative Audit Committee shall provide oversight of the conduct of performance and program audits and program evaluations that are outside the authority of the Secretary of State under Section 2, Article 6. And that the Joint Committee shall review the efforts of state departments, boards, commissions, institutions, so on and so forth. If the Secretary of State's office says, nah, we don't feel like doing that, they can basically snub their nose at us at the Joint Legislative Audit Committee. I mean, they could. They haven't been. I understand that. But they could. They can just sort of say, well, yeah, we don't want to take your direction and we're going to go do what we want to do.
They have always, Mr. Chair, they have never done that. But okay. I think based on the independence that they must maintain as an audit office, I think that's a possibility.
Okay. Thank you. Questions?
I had a question, Mr. Chair. I've been sitting on the Ways and Means Natural Resources Subcommittee, Ken, and one of the things that, as I'm sure you're well aware, is that the Ways and Means process is currently looking at performance measures for all the agency budgets. So how would you see, which, you know, is a fairly new function, and I think the Ways and Means process is still working through how we are linking those performance measures to budgeting, as you just mentioned. So how would you see a legislative audit function tying in with those performance measures and, you know, making sure we're not going to duplicate efforts, recreate the wheel? I know a lot of effort has been put in to setting up those performance measures, and we need to be somewhat consistent so we can track over time whether or not these agency programs are functioning or performing in the manner that, you know, we hope them to. So if you could talk a little bit about how you see a legislative audit office linking to that process.
Mr. Chair, Representative Bingfelder, I think the primary way it would link is based on what we are learning about this process is that one of the important things is to audit the data that agencies submit to describe their performance. And right now, we are relying on agencies submitting their data with little oversight from anybody about whether they achieved a certain target or goal that they were indicating in their performance measure. And we think this would be one role that the office could do would be to do those kinds of auditing data of agencies. Of course, you couldn't do all of them. But you could do it in a rolling cycle or look at some that during the budget review the committee thought were questionable. And so you could identify which agencies you would like this auditing function to be done. And another way is on setting targets. Right now we don't have, as I'm sure you've encountered in looking at performance measures, a lot of times there's not a lot of rationalization behind a target. What is a good target? Is it too low? Is it too high? Should it be higher to encourage more aggressive activity on the agency's part? Or is it too high which means the agency's never going to attain it. And I think that's another thing that an audit function could do, is look at those types of things. And actually even review the language of performance measures themselves.
You want to follow up? Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Ken. Yeah, that's been a sort of troubling, I think, element of sitting in the Ways and Means, is trying to figure out where those numbers are coming from. So I think that would be a good function. The question I have, and also as a follow-up to a question I asked Speaker Minnis, is why couldn't we do the same thing for tax expenditures, considering that's actually almost twice as much taxpayer money that we spend is actually on these tax expenditures versus state programs. Could we set up the same type of performance measures or look to see if they're achieving what we had sort of passed into law for these tax expenditures to achieve?
Mr. Chair, Representative Dingfelder, I think that's an excellent idea and would be well within the realm of that office or even Legislative Fiscal Office in conjunction with Legislative Revenue could do some of that kind of work right now, I think, if there was interest in doing that.
Thank you.
Thank you. Other questions for Ken?
Ken, I have a quick question for you. When was the Legislative Fiscal Office created?
I believe it was 1959, I believe.
Has Ken been there since then?
I don't think he has, but I think we... Mike Stinson probably was. And do you know why the Legislative Fiscal Office was created? And I'm just trying to kind of... Well, go ahead. I'm really not trying to put you on the spot, but I'm just curious if you happen to know the history as to why the Legislative Fiscal Office was created.
Mr. Chair, I'm not exactly certain of all the history. I know before that there had been budget committees, and they were just staffed along with other committees, and I believe there was just a belief that due to the nature of continuing budgets every 2 years that there needed to be some function like that. And then I believe after that, the Legislative Revenue was created maybe a decade or 15 years after that. And as a spin-off, at one point, all of those functions were done in one office.
Yes. And was Legislative Revenue created because the legislative branch wanted a fair assessment in terms of what they could anticipate revenue impacts would be with certain statutory changes, also what it would look like in terms of the amount of money that they would have to spend, and that sort of thing?
Mr. Chair, yes, I believe that was exactly the reason, so that there would be an independent look at revenue forecasts. And that is done now. That's what Mr. Warner does, is works with the official forecasters and reviews what they're doing, and just to give that legislative input to that process. Yes.
Okay. And I'm going to assume that it was probably that may have also been one of the reasons why the fiscal office itself was created, was so that the legislature had an independent, you know, legislative group that could be helping them in terms of the expenditures and what seemed to be fair and what an impact would be.
Yes.
As opposed to relying on the agencies or the executive branch to always be feeding the information into the legislative branch.
Ms. Chair, that would be correct. And I think again in 1990, the legislature added three positions to the Legislative Fiscal Office to do fiscal impact statements, because prior to that they were done by the executive branch and submitted to the body typically at floor session time because of the difficulty in getting them done on time. And so the legislature saw a need to have that done internally and added staff to the Legislative Fiscal Office to conduct fiscal impact statements.
And when you do a fiscal impact statement, while you rely on information from the executive branch, do the LFO analysts do their own analysis as well, and then that's what we're presented with?
Mr. Chair, in many cases, we get preliminary information from the agency and then we review it. We have two people assigned to every bill, a fiscal analyst and a budget analyst, and they consult with each other, look at the material that was sent, and I would think in nearly every case make a return call to the agency asking them for explanations or questioning their data or and in some cases, if we have independent information, we will use that. But in many cases, we are reliant on them simply because of the staffing levels that we have.
Sure.
But in many cases, what you eventually see has gone through a number of iterations between us and the agency to resolve questions that we have about what they're claiming, what their understanding of the bill is and does versus our understanding of it.
So, generally speaking, we could sort of rely on the fact that when we get an analysis from your office relative to a fiscal impact, it's pretty accurate. I recognize it. You know, nobody's going to be perfect 100% of the time and exactly right on and that sort of thing. But my point is that it's as accurate as probably as practicable and possible.
Mr. Chair, I would say that we give great thought to the assumptions built into how an agency has approached a bill. And that's where we do most of our questioning about their assumptions. If they say it's going to take a certain number of FTE, then that's really just a calculation of costs based on the implementation date of the bill and the salary ranges of the positions involved. So what we do mostly is question the assumptions of why do you need those FTE and what additional work will this cause you to have. So in that sense, I think it's as accurate as possible. But then again, it is speculative in the sense that you never know the exact number of, if it's instituting a new program that provides services, you never know exactly how many people are going to come for that service. You have to make an assumption about it. So in those cases, I think it's difficult to say that it's entirely accurate, but it is.
Well, and as I said, as accurate as practical. Yeah. I mean, and I recognize that there's a lot of other aspects that can come into play. But so, and a legislative audit office then would sort of create for us in the legislative branch to sort of take the look after the fact.
Mr. Chair, that would be correct. Yes.
Okay. Thank you. Are there any other questions for Mr. Rocco? Thanks, Kenny. Ted, can I ask you a question real quick? And my question, and again, I don't mean to put you on the spot, but my question is with regards to the Legislative Council office. You're our lawyers. Do you know when the Legislative Council Office was created, by any chance?
Mr. Chair, Ted Reitlinger from Legislative Council. I believe it was the mid-50s when the Oregon Revised Statutes was changed from the previous code to the ORS.
And do you know, by any chance, who did the... what is now done by Legislative Council, who did that before Legislative Council was created?
Mr. Chair, as I understand it, volunteers from the Oregon State Bar Association in part came down and helped with drafting bills, and I believe that it was at that point that people realized that maybe a more permanent professional staff was a good idea for consistency in how the statutes are drafted, and that's how the office came into being.
Okay. So never at any time did the legislature ever rely on the executive branch, i.e. the Attorney General's office or anyone associated with the legislative branch, the executive branch, to actually draft the statute changes during the session?
Mr. Chair, I'm certain that in the past that the Attorney General's office has drafted bills that have been submitted to the legislature. I'm not certain whether or not the legislature has actually paid the Attorney General for that service in lieu of having its own staff or other volunteers. I just don't know the answer to that question.
Okay. And so really why LC was created was because it was becoming very apparent that the use of volunteers to try to draft statutes was not necessarily a reliable way to go. I mean, not in a demeaning way, but just not reliable from a standpoint of not necessarily the statutes always meshing the way that we would like them to.
I think that would be correct. The assumption is with our office that we have a professional trained staff who understands how to draft a bill, you know, and is expected to understand all of the constitutional and other federal and state laws that come into play when you draft a bill. And to do that, it takes, you know, somebody who's pretty much devoted to that full time. It's a difficult task to ask a volunteer to come in and perform.
Absolutely. Do you suppose that legislative counsel was created as opposed to adding more staff to the Attorney General's office or to the executive branch because the legislature wanted to have the independence of their own staff in terms of drafting the statutes to get what they wanted?
Mr. Chair, I don't know. I think that's an accurate assumption. I mean, clearly, the Attorney General's office is set up to provide legal advice to the executive branch of state government. Our office, as small as it is the only legal office that is in existence to provide legal advice to the legislative branch. And obviously at some point a policy decision was made that it was a good idea for the legislature to have its own lawyers and get its own advice. Obviously, as you've seen here today, the legal advice is somewhat different between the Secretary of State's office and the legislative branch, and that's an example. And that happens sometimes, not always, but sometimes the Attorney General and the Legislative Council will disagree on certain issues.
And both many times based on very accurate research that's been done, based on previous court decisions or other types of advice or opinions. Excuse me, that have been rendered, whether they be rendered in Oregon or in other states that might have similar types of languages that Oregon has.
Yeah, sure. And this is an example of a case where the Constitution says one thing, and there are no appellate court decisions interpreting what that means. So it's lawyers from the Attorney General's office and the Legislative Council's office trying to make their best guess about what the Constitution actually means.
Sure. Okay. Thanks, Ted. I appreciate it.
Well,
thank you. We have with us Representative Greg Smith, and so as Ted is moving, Representative Smith, would you like to go ahead and come up? And
you bet.
I appreciate you coming in. And
I appreciate your leadership, Chair Crummel, on this important House Bill 2001. For the record, I'm Oregon State Representative Greg Smith. I have the distinct pleasure of representing what I believe is the best part of the state of Oregon, and that's Union, Wallowa, Umatilla, and Morrow counties. Yeah, I know. I'm sure if each of you were here, you'd be saying you represent the best part of the state of Oregon. I just want to take a moment and share my thoughts with you on House Bill 2001. As a member of the Joint Committee on Ways and Means, and as a member of the Ways and Means Subcommittee on General Government, I think House Bill 2001 truly has merit, and I applaud the Speaker of the House for bringing this initiative forward. Under the current system, there's concern that our legislative fiscal office is not always getting the exact and accurate information that they need, or perhaps getting the information that they need in a way that the legislature can use it. By bringing the function of performance audits into the legislative fiscal office, I think there's an opportunity to really bring a greater connection between performance and accountability. Now, this is no commentary on our current Secretary of State. As a matter of fact, in the last day or two, I've been patting our Secretary of State on the back for some of the very good work he's done in his work in the Corporates Division and his work with our Blue Book and his work with several other areas. But I have to share with you, this is a matter of a fiscal responsibility as a legislator, and as a Ways and Means member, I have an obligation to the other 89 members in this building, along with my constituents and along with the citizens of Oregon, to make sure that they're getting the very best information in a timely manner, in a manner that meets the needs of those folks who work for you and I, and that's legislative fiscal. So I fully support House Bill 2001. I fully support our speaker in her effort to boldly bring this initiative forward. What I'd also share with you is that most other states have a special unit to evaluate and to audit state policies and agencies, and it usually or traditionally is linked directly to the legislative body. And so we're not breaking new ground, but rather we're moving ourselves in line with perhaps what other states see as a best practice. So with that, I just want to come and share my support of House Bill 2001.
Thank you. Are there any questions for Representative Smith? You are going to get off easy.
A Ways and Means guy getting off easy. Yeah, and, I'm taking this and running.
You know, let's see. I got to see if I can think of a question to ask you. No, I'm just kind of kidding.
Colonel, I appreciate your leadership.
Well, thank you. And, you know, flattery will get you everywhere. But I do have one question that I just thought of. And
okay.
And that is from a standpoint of when you're in Ways and Means, because one of the things that's been talked about by both you and Speaker Minnis when she was here, is this tying of performance measures, and I know that in 2003 performance measures became a very integral part of the budgeting process, and I see that, and I do see that continuing. Do you, as you have started to look at budgets now this session, and you're looking at the performance measures, and I would assume that you're sort of looking at, okay, what has been attained based on what was the measure last time around, what's been attained, and so now are there, first of all, adjustments needed to the performance measures, and, you know, up or down or whatever the case may be, but I recognize that legislative fiscal is, you know, does the best they can.
Sure.
But do you think that an audit office would be helpful in terms of being able to you know, tell you, okay, this is what we expected to happen. Now this is what actually happened. Can you expand on that a little bit?
Well, let me share with you, Chair Cromwell. I think this must be why you're chair of the audits committee, because you're raising a point I didn't expound on, but I should have, and that is, in the Ways and Means Committee, we're now taking a new and innovative approach to budgeting in the state of Oregon. And under this approach, what we're doing is a three-pronged effort. And the first is we're taking a look at a high level, the agency's overall mission, their activities, and the performance measures that tie to those activities that tie back to the mission. Then once we go through that, we're ranking those. And what we're trying to do is we're trying to say, based upon the performance measures and the activities, and as they tie to the mission, rate them. And we're putting them literally in a one through however large number. And we're trying to determine what are the highest priorities for citizens in the state of Oregon. And in round two, if you will, what we're going to be doing is taking those priorities that were based upon performance measures, and we're going to be allocating dollars in kind of a first cut, if you will, to tie to those activities that are tied to the performance measure that's tied to the mission. And then in round three, the final funding decisions will occur. Now, it's very difficult for us to get to round two and round three without having very, very good and coordinated, and I'm going to underline coordinated, performance measures and performance audited information, if you will, that we can use to make good financial decisions. And so by you know, by creating this new legislative audit office and by having that tied directly to legislative fiscal, you're going to create a greater partnership between what the legislature needs in terms of providing fiscal responsibility and what it needs in terms of monitoring performance. Now, I share that comment with you. Whether you have a Democrat in that office or a Republican, there needs to be a link between the performance and the amount of money we provide, and this helps get us there.
Okay, thank you. I would mention that one of the things I've noticed is that the Senate Democrats have seemed to be pretty strong on this from a standpoint of the performance measures and sort of getting to this idea of budgeting for results.
Well, I would share with you, Chair Crummell, and members of the committee, while I cannot in any way speak for the chair of the Ways and Means General Government Committee, I did go and speak with her and share with her that I would be coming forward today, and her comment was, go forth. This is an effort that truly deserves to be flushed out and to see if this will work better for the legislature as a whole.
So and I think that the point is that you're right. It doesn't matter whether you're Republican or Democrat or independent. This is a very nonpartisan issue. It's one that needs all of our attention.
I would just add really quick, Mr. Chair, that in no way can Ways and Means appropriately do its job under this new mechanism of budgeting if we don't have good and coordinated. I keep saying good. I want to say coordinated. If we don't have coordinated performance audits that legislative fiscal can tie in with it, what they're currently doing, and bring forward to us.
Good. Thank you, Chair.
I do have a question. Thank you.
Sure.
Representative Smith, I think you're making really good points, but I guess my question would be, why can't you do that right now by just working with the Secretary of State's office, Audits Division, who seem perfectly willing to
follow
our direction?
Mr. Chair, Vice Chair Rosenbaum, I think that's a very fair and good question that deserves to be flushed through. As a person who's served on Ways and Means now for three terms, I think one of the things we find frustrating is during transfers of information, a lot of good stuff that you and I ought to know about gets lost, or interpretation seems to be made that perhaps wouldn't it be if there was a more direct link between the people performing the audit and then those people coming straight to the committee and reporting it. Traditionally, what happens is a performance audit will be conducted during the interim. That information is then shared with different committees, but traditionally not the Ways and Means Committee at that time. It's usually shared with an interim committee, and then the legislative fiscal officer will get an update, and then perhaps a couple months later, that LFO officer brings the information forward as was shared with them. And so you're creating, one, a time delay, and then also, two, just the sharing of information. And it's kind of like the old telephone game. If we all started passing information along, would we still have the exact and same accurate information we need? And so, again, it's not a commentary on our Secretary of State. It's more of a commentary on the process. And if we can tie it closer together and have it more directly linked, it works better for everyone in the building. So.
Other questions? Representative, thank you for taking time out of your schedule. I know you've got to get back to committee, and I appreciate you being here.
Well, I have to share with you, the Ways and Means Committee truly appreciates the work the Audit Committee is doing. We kind of see you folks as the guard dogs, if you will, picking up on a lot of stuff that perhaps we don't catch. So thank you very much.
Thank you. Thank you. Well, let's see. Is there anyone else that wants to testify on House Bill 2001? Okay. I think that given the complexity of our state budget and the and the performance measurements and how that is all coming together, I really see this as being something that we might really want to take a good, strong look at, and I think it makes sense from a practical and policy and financial standpoint. But anyway, that's what some of our testimony showed anyway. With that, I'm going to close the public hearing on House Bill 2001. I'm going to clean off my desk. And now I'm going to open a public hearing on House Bill 2027. And we have no one to testify on House Bill 2027. Jim, can you give us an update of where we are with this bill?
We had our first public hearing on the 8th of March. Since then, we have not had any amendments submitted. So the information we're dealing with back on the 8th of March is stayed the same. There's still a subsequent referral to Ways and Means. No other information.
Okay. Members, what I think I would... there is a subsequent to Ways and Means, right?
Yes.
Okay. Okay. What my intention would be, members, with this then would be... Is there anyone here that would like to speak to House Bill 2027? As long as I got the public hearing open. What I would like to do, members, is have Jim schedule this for a work session sometime in the next week. I can't remember how our schedule is looking, but anyway, so we bring this back for a work session to send to for the purposes of sending it over to Ways and Means. And I would like to send it with a due pass recommendation. So be thinking about that when we're dealing with it. Any comments about 2027? Okay, with that, I'll close the public hearing on House Bill 2027. I'd like to open a public hearing on House Bill 2028. And Jim, if you'll give us a little update on this one while Kelly's bringing me the...
Yes, sir. We had our first meeting on January 26th. We have since received a -1 amendment, which is in your packets. 2028 has no revenue impact, has no expenditure impact. We need to get another one with the amendment prior to passing it out.
Get an get
a second.
Okay. Would you ask for that fiscal impact to be to us then with the -1 amendments attached? And members, again, my intention with this. Now, does this one go to Ways and Means also?
No, sir. No.
Okay. My intention with this, members, would be if you're agreeable to the -1 amendments, would be to put the to bring this back for a work session, put those put the -1 amendments into the bill, and then move the bill onto the floor. So if you have so be kind of thinking about that, and we will try to get that scheduled in the next week or so. Okay. Any comments or questions about 2028? Okay. With that, then, I'll close the public hearing on House Bill 2028. And since we don't have anything else for us to do this morning, any comments, questions, concerns?
No.
No? Okay. Then with that, we will stand adjourned. Thank you.